Welcome to the NOLA Drinks Show. Join us as we explore the world of drink and food in New Orleans and beyond. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, Brian Diaz here. Welcome to the show. Hey, here at NOLA Drinks, we think collusion. Not a crime. You keep walking it back, don't you? Hey, we got a good show coming up for you. We're going to jump right into it. First off, we're going to talk with Salvatore Tafuri, Rudy Carraro, and Gabrielle Manfredi, who are with Amaro Montenegro and Aperitivo Select. Recorded that at Tales of the Cocktail. Great conversation, fun bunch of guys. And then we're going to bounce over to the Louisiana Restaurant Association Expo, the LRA Expo, that just ended today, if you're listening on the radio, at the Montreal Convention Center. First, we chat with Stan Harris, the president of the LRA, and also joined by one of their major members, Dwight Prudham of Republic National Distribution Corporation. Then we chat with Mary Beth Ferris of Tabasco, the pepper sauce, that's right. And then we're joined by Wendy Warren, who is the vice president of communications for the LRA. Stan and Dwight stick around for another shot with NOLA Drinks on the podcast only version, as do the guys from Montenegro and Aperitivo Select. So if you're listening on the radio, be sure to get the podcasts all at noladrinks.com. Jumping right in, here we go. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with the WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening in here. A special shout out to our friends at Sylvain, 625 Charter Street, for hosting us here today. We're going to have an interesting conversation here coming up. I am joined by three excellent guests, Gabrielle Manfredi, who is parachuted in to join us as a special guest. So thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you for having us.
Absolutely. Happy to have you from Oriole. Absolutely. And also Salvatore Tafuri. Did I say your last name right, Salvatore?
Absolutely correct. Okay, Tafuri. Yes. Thank you.
Excellent. No problem. And Rudy Carraro. And Rudy and you and Salvatore are with Amaro Montenegro.
Correct.
Yeah. So let's talk about this. We're going to talk a little bit about Amaro Montenegro. We're going to talk about Amaro and what that is. We're going to talk about Aperitivo and what that is. And we'll get Gabrielle in there to talk about what he does as well. We'll kind of work all this in together in a conversation. But let's start here, y'all. Let's talk a little bit about the brands themselves, and let's talk about the category. So why don't we start with Aperitivo? How does that sound? Can you describe Aperitivo to us and what we're thinking?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm lucky enough that I grew up in the surrounding of Venice. That is very strong in aperitivo culture. Basically, in Venice, every time you go out, you don't go out for like a proper drink, but you go out for an aperitivo. That usually, it shouldn't take longer than an hour, but most of the time it takes more than three.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, and the curious fact of the aperitivo in Venice is that it's always associated with some food. So you go out, example, out of the office, you stop at the Baccaro, that is the name for a Venetian bar, and you have a spritz, and usually it's the original Venetian spritz made with select aperitivo, garnished with an olive, a slice of lemon, and then you have some cicchetti. They're nothing more than Italian tapas. Mm-hmm. So you can have fun with your friends. You can have a light, refreshing, low ABV cocktail, like the Venetian spritz, and some bites. Of course, the culture goes back in the end of the 1800s, but it picked up at the beginning of the 1900s as, you know, lifetime, like a lifestyle, let's say.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So everybody was interested on enjoying la bella vita. You know, you're sitting down around Venice with the canals, the spritz, you have some food.
Sitting outside often.
Absolutely.
Right. Yes.
When the time is permitting. And it became like a worldwide concept that nowadays, in 2018, is still very popular, and all the bars and all the brands try to expand and make their own.
So tell us, Rudy, a little bit, what is an aperitivo? What would be the process of making it, and discuss maybe some of the botanicals and other things that are...
If we look at the history of the aperitivo, the word aperitivo comes from the Latin word aperire, that means to open. Because usually the liquors that you use for making an aperitivo, they have very bitter notes that they keep on stimulating your palate, making you feel a little bit hungry. Mm-hmm. So this is the reason why it's called aperitivo. And it's usually consumed before the meal for this reason. And as I was saying, it's a lifestyle because it's a moment where you can socialize with your friend and just have fun. In terms of the drink itself, usually is a light ABV cocktail, so not very heavy, mixed with some wine, mixed with soda perhaps, if you want to talk about the style of the Americano cocktail.
Right.
Or if you want to go back to the history of one of the most classic cocktails, we can speak about the Negroni itself as well.
Right.
It's the king of the aperitivo, no? With
yes.
the bitter notes that really stimulates your palate before the meal.
So it is certainly something, as you said, that you can mix with wine, but certainly something you can mix with vermouth, which is obviously the form of wine. That's where we get to the Negroni, right?
That's correct.
And the Americano is... that's an older cocktail, this Negroni, than the Americano, correct? There's a bit of a debate on that, right?
Yes, absolutely. So I will start with, of course, what it was called, the Mito. It was like a bitter agent and a vermouth. And then the evolution brings the Negroni, so around the 1920s, mm-hmm. 1919 to be precise, mm-hmm. where there was the Count Camillo Negroni. There was a very adventurous guy that was coming back from London and decided to ask the bartender to make his drink with a little bit more boost.
Gotcha.
Okay, so to add a bit of gin instead of the soda of the Americano, mm-hmm. okay? And it becomes like a very worldwide trend, basically.
Right.
And then straight away to follow, it become the most popular aperitif. It become the spritz, so basically more light and refreshing, so more easy to drink for everybody. Mm-hmm. And I believe it's also associate itself with. Very well with the style of the drink, of the Loewe drinking,
sure,
that we have now.
Sure. Yeah. Now, Gabriel, at your bar, yes. Tell us a little bit about what do you use aperitivo in, besides some of the classic cocktails that we've talked about?
We, back in London, we like a lot to play with Montenegro also, mm-hmm. as aperitif, because we like the sweet notes on it. So we try to play with our customer, showing them how to use an amaro, also in the early evening.
Okay, gotcha, yes. Gotcha. And Salvatore, as far as let's stick with aperitivo for a second.
Of course.
Yeah, what? Tell us a little bit about what are some of the botanicals and what are some of the typical. And I know I think if people associate aperitivo with maybe a small number of brands, there is a broad spectrum of flavor profile, mm-hmm. in aperitivos. But can you give us kind of an understanding of what ingredients we find in this, what botanicals we find?
Yeah, absolutely. I think actually it's really interesting what Gabriele says before, because aperitivo is like enjoying a lifestyle, like Rudy said before, but he can make aperitivo in a lot of different ways. Mm-hmm. And most of the time it's a low ABV cocktail, so that's the reason why you can mix an aperitivo and a bitter, and we will see the difference after. Most of the time, the most popular botanical, they're orange, grapefruits, rhubarb. Those are like key ingredients for Italian aperitif, mm-hmm. the red Italian aperitif. How you can see Aperitivo Select, actually is really popular in the region of Venezia, Veneto, to make the Venetian spritz. And that's actually two parts of Select, three parts of Prosecco, sparkling wine, and one part of a club soda. But something interesting, because we garnish with an orange slice, but also with three olives.
Yeah.
Rudy, do you want to know why? Okay. Do you know why three olives?
Okay, there are many different saying why people get the orange. I'm going to explain like the two that I think they are the most... correct. So the first one is, I believe, the most connected to the real world, is that you have the connection between the spritz and the cicchetti, so the little tapas.
Yes.
So you always have something to eat with your spritz, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you have you drink your spritz, and then at the end you find like a little reward, an olive waiting for you at the bottom of the glass.
It's more sip, bite, right?
You got it.
We are Italians, drinking and eating.
It goes
that's what we do, pretty much.
Right.
The other story that is a little bit more fascinating, but still it's difficult to find some documentation about it, but it related to the tradition or to the trick of the English bartenders back in the days, that they used to put like a pinch of salt, mm-hmm. in their pint before they were serving to the guest. Just so in this way, the guest would feel a little bit more thirsty,
right.
At the end of their pint, so he would order another one. So the olive is nothing more than the answer to the pinch of salt, because usually the olive, they are stored in brine,
right.
To the salty touch of the English bartenders.
Got it. Interesting.
And also you can see today the aperitif anywhere, like you always have a peanuts maybe at the bar or some nuts, so that saltiness, it makes you drink more and faster, and that's... good for everybody, right, for exactly. business. And you can have a lot of fun too.
Exactly. And just an example like you see in Asia where it's a lot of pickled vegetables, yes. for example, for the same thing that you're talking about. Well, let's do this, you guys. Let's take a short break here on the show, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to get into Amaro a little further, and we'll chat a little bit about that. We're going to taste some stuff too. I think it's probably time for that. I'm thirsty talking about salt.
With this weather. with this weather in here in New Orleans, we definitely need a drink.
Yes. Absolutely. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. Come on back. Saw. She does some things against the law. She took my paw right from my paw. I'm going to knock on her door. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Yeah, we are talking about aperitivo, and we're going to move into Amaro in a second. We are chatting with Gabriele Manfredi, Salvatore Tafuri, and Rudy Corrado. And gentlemen, thank you. So we were talking about aperitivo, and let's talk about aperitivo select. As you said, Salvatore, it's people think it's a new product. They probably just haven't seen it on the market in certain places, right?
Yeah, that's why. But actually, it's the original ingredients for the original Venetian spritz.
Spritz, yeah.
Like I said before, the ingredients are 3 parts of Prosecco, 2 parts of select aperitivo, 1 part of club soda, orange slice, and don't forget 3 olives.
And 3 olives.
Yes, that will make a big, big difference.
That helps sell the product, right? Yes. We established that before.
We're still working, you know. Like right. We enjoy what we do, but
exactly. Well, as you said, and people probably, you know, we're talking about aperitivo select here, of course, but people might associate the category with Campari or with Aperol. And as you said, Salvatore, during the break, this sits nicely in the middle. It's not quite as dry as Campari, and certainly far less sweet than Aperol is. So I think it actually makes it pretty friendly to using it in a wide range of cocktails. Would you agree with that, Gabriel?
I totally agree. It's a kind of dream product for each bartender, because as you said, it's the perfect combination between Campari and Aperol.
Yeah, and between sweet and bitter, right?
So the bittersweet level is perfectly balanced, help us as a bartender to use it for any aperitif style. It works very well also in a Negroni.
Yeah, this would be my type of choice for a Negroni, is because I like that bitter note. And actually, one of my favorite versions of the Negroni, which has become popular these days, is the Mezcal Negroni. Mm-hmm. And this has a little bit of smokiness to it, actually, that I think would play really nicely with a Mezcal Negroni.
Actually, we have a recipe that we would like to share with you. Yes. I don't know if you want to call it a Negroni. No, we're like proud to have a Negroni.
It's a term of convenience.
It's a variation. We can say that.
Yes.
It's one part of Mezcal,
yep.
One part of Aperitivo Select, mm-hmm. and 1 part of Amaro Montenegro. Steer on the rocks. If you have a big cube, that will help.
Yeah.
If you don't, just enjoy your drink. Orange and lime zest.
That sounds wonderful. And actually, because this, I guess we're swapping in here, of course, is the Amaro for vermouth in this case. And that's I'm going to have to try that.
Please. We can try it like in 5 minutes.
Okay, right. We take a break. We'll get them to open up the bar and we'll do that. Well, let's talk about the category of Amaro a little bit. So we've talked about aperitivos. Let's talk about Amaros. And Amaro is obviously a term that's applied exclusively to Italian liqueurs. It's a big world out there that people want to group in together. But should I throw it to either one of you? Tell us, Salvatore, tell us about Amaro.
Yeah, of course. So Amaro is a big category, and Italy is the land of Amaro. And we're really proud to represent Amaro Montenegro. For the last 75 years, it's been the number one Amaro in the land of Amaros. The reason why? Because it's the most versatile Amaro. And the beauty is actually wherever you go in Italy, in every single region, you're going to find a different Amaro. So that's the beauty. But here in the United States, mostly the bar, they carry more Amaros than in Italy. Because in Italy, you drink and you eat regionally. Mm-hmm. But Montenegro is pretty much in any bar.
Right.
Amaro Montenegro is a mix of 40 different botanicals. The bittersweets from the orange, vanilla, coriander, marjoram, oregano. Italians, never forget oregano in anything. and then we have 3 processes to make Amaro Montenegro. So it's a maceration, boiling, and distillation. And then we still have 2 different distilleries. One is in Teramon and one is in Bologna. And still today, it's a secret recipe. And there is only one person who knows the secret recipe.
Okay.
It's not me.
Okay. It's actually Rudy.
Is it Rudy?
It's actually Rudy.
Is it you, Rudy? A lot of pressure on me now.
It's in a notebook in his back pocket, right? So there is not something where then, I know, say, with chartreuse, for example, that I think it's two monks are familiar with the recipe because it's in case one gets hit by a bus. So
don't ask me that question, okay. Because actually we don't know how to answer. It's just one person.
It's just one person.
Really just one person.
We and will not. Go, yeah. The
whole, do you want to know the name?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Matteo Bonoli is the master herbalist for Amaro Montenegro.
So and he has to be kept very well protected then.
Oh yes.
No. We'll catch him later. Don't worry.
Exactly. We'll put him in a bulletproof vessel, vehicle like the Pope.
We've been trying. Right. Right.
Well, let's describe the flavor profile of Montenegro a little bit and have a sip here. And you want to answer that one, Rudy?
Yeah. Let me have a sip first.
Yes, okay.
I need to refresh my memory.
All right, you do that.
Fantastic. still tastes good. So we have this very fresh citrusy flavor at the beginning. Okay, that of course is being given by the three different kind of oranges that we use. The middle of the tasting, the palate, you have all the spiciness like cinnamon, you have cloves, and some nutmeg as well. Mm-hmm. Okay, that is very intense and complicated. And then it finishes very long and bitter because, of course, it's an Amaro.
Yeah.
And if you translate Amaro in English, it becomes bitter.
Right.
Actually, if I can swing a little bit on this point, I would say that, yes, if we literally translate it, Amaro becomes bitter, but I think the perfect translation of the liquid itself would be like an herbal liquor, because the word bitter might be misleading sometimes, because some people, most of the people actually, they have unpleasant feeling with bitter things, mm-hmm. because most of the people are not Italian, okay? And yes, Italian has a very bitter palate, but for the people that they're not used to drink coffee since they're younger, you know, or having bitter aperitifs since they're younger, it can be very misleading. So herbal liqueur is the way how I like to describe it to people that they're new to this word.
Well, you raise a really good point, Rudy, too, because I think in regards to Amaro, there's a very broad flavor spectrum, difference of flavor, but also difference of sweet to bitter. Some some are much sweeter than others. I know, and some are very, very, very dry. And I think Montenegro is interesting because it finishes, like you say, with a bit of bitter, but it's a little closer on the sweeter end of the spectrum compared to many Amari, right?
Yeah, that's why we like to describe as a bittersweet, yes. Because you have the two components together, mm-hmm. and that actually helps a lot to be mixed in cocktails as well. So we're going to see the parts. Actually, it's really interesting because in Italy, you drink Amaros after dinner. In the States, most of the time you're drinking cocktails.
Right.
So that's a huge difference for us.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting to say that too, because we were talking about with the aperitivo select, for example, a lot of people will associate the term aperitif and misuse it in the States anyway, thinking that means an after-dinner drink. And what we're talking about is a before-dinner drink here in this instance. Well, Gabriel, tell us, we got about a minute and a half before we're going to take a break here again. Tell us something that you like to do with Montenegro.
Well, as I said before, I really like to use it also in early dinner, mm-hmm. as an aperitivo. It works well with tonic, with soda. Back in London, we also using as an alternative for our old fashioned. So okay. Mix it with simply bourbon, mm-hmm. Touch of Amaro Montenegro, and okay. bitter.
Ah, very nice. Yes. Oh, that sounds like a very good version of an old fashioned. Excellent. Well, so with the Montenegro brand, there are. Do you guys have others? There's other stuff in the portfolio, correct?
Yeah, we have a Rosso Antico, is an Italian vermouth, mm-hmm. and then also we have a Vecchia Romagna, is an amazing brandy, Italian brandy,
okay.
from Bologna as well.
And let me ask you this question, Salvatore, because you guys are both ambassadors for, mm-hmm. for the brand. Now you're based in New York,
correct?
And where are you? The whole United States?
Yes,
you,
I'm national brand ambassador national for Amaro Montenegro.
Okay, yeah. And Rudy.
I'm based in London.
You're based in London.
And sometimes I'm lucky enough to come to US.
Okay. Oh, very well said. Very nice. So are you Europe in general or UK?
I'm based in London, but look after the European market.
Got you. Okay, yeah. Great.
And Russia sometimes.
Great. Oh, really?
When it gets too hot in London, I go over
to
Russia.
Did you go to the World Cup?
Unfortunately, no.
Okay. You didn't have a reason to this year from Italy, right? Yeah. Just to say, like, we didn't have a reason to this year.
Can we skip that? Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Let's keep on talking about drinks, please.
This is something we can all agree on in this conversation.
Yes.
Well, and Gabriel, tell people about, we got about 45 seconds. I'll tell people about Oriole. Where do we find you?
It's in Farrington. It's right under the meat market in London.
Okay.
Yes.
How long have you been there?
Since the opening. So it's in November will be 3 years.
Okay. Excellent. Yes. Great. And have you been to Tales of the Cocktail before?
Yes. This is the third year in a row.
Okay, great.
Always actually with Montenegro.
That's a good association, yes, right? Yes, yes, yes. So let's do this, guys. We're going to take a little break here on the radio portion of the show, and then you guys are going to stick around, and we're going to come back for our podcast-only conversation on another Shot with Nola Drinks. We're going to talk just for a few minutes about low ABV cocktails and how these fit nicely in that. Take a little break here on the show, friends. Come on back. All right, everybody. Hey, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening in to the show today. Hey, we're here at the Louisiana Restaurant Association Expo here at the Montreal Convention Center, and I am pleased to be joined by our first guest, Stan Harris, who is the president and CEO of the LRA. Stan, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Brian, for having us today.
Absolutely. Absolute pleasure. And Dwight Prudham, who is with Republic National Distribution Corporation, or we're going to just call you Republic or RNDC, if that's
RNDC
okay.
Is perfect.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, I'm so busy, I have to speak in acronyms. So it's not
I'm used to it.
Well, great. Gentlemen, thanks for being here. This is it's a great expo, Stan, and it's an important expo. I think we talk about the importance of the restaurant industry to the state of Louisiana for our economy, our tourism economy, and all of that stuff.
It's easy to overlook the impact of the restaurant industry because restaurant people as a whole don't tell their own story very well. They don't talk about it in their community. They don't talk about their financial impact. In a city like New Orleans, we're over 40% of the sales tax collected. Mm-hmm. We're over 50% of the property tax paid. We're the largest employer. But we're the largest employer statewide. We saw the governor last night at dinner. And one of the reasons that we have those relationships is when you look at the fact that the industry employs over 200,000 people. It does about $9.5 billion in revenue. It collects somewhere in the neighborhood of $875 to $900 million in state and local sales tax every year, mm-hmm. without any exemptions or exceptions. It's a very impactful business when it comes to the state's economy. And we haven't even got to the impact on tourism with hotels and entertainment attractions and the cultural evidence there.
That's a great point, Stan, because I think we talk about this a lot on the show is that understanding the importance of the tourism economy, especially in the city that we're sitting in here in New Orleans, it's the backbone of the economy here, and that rests firmly on hospitality industry is really the music and hospitality would make this happen, right?
You bet. The cultural economy here is tied with a lot of different things. We have a lot of festivals. We have some great attractions here. And as an association, we've tried to partner with New Orleans and Company, with the Tourism Marketing Corporation, with the Audubon Institute, with the World War II Museum, all of these different attractions to try to create a seamless approach to how we market the community. Mm-hmm. They have some niche marketing and how they do those things. But in this particular event, we invite their people, their board members, their members to come and take a look at what we're doing here at our trade show, because this is a way for us to have a really strong outreach and talk to people about what's innovative, what's new in the marketplace, and what's tried and true as well, because sometimes innovation isn't the entire answer.
Right. Gotcha. Dwight, let me ask you this question, because something that Stan just touched on here, obviously with Republic National Distribution Corporation, you guys are a large liquor distributor.
Correct.
What's the importance of you participating in an event like this?
Well, I think, number one, if you look at Louisiana as a whole, right, you can go anywhere in the world, and I mean anywhere in the world, and you ask anybody what they think of Louisiana, and one of the three things they're going to say is food.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right.
Right?
Yep.
And part of the party, you know, big easy lifestyle is alcohol. Mm-hmm. And alcoholic beverages is what we do, but it's a natural fit. You know, the things that are important to us and growing tourism are the same thing that's important to the restaurant association. Yes. Mm-hmm. And just the state tourism in general. And I think that, you know, we're all pulling on the same rope and trying to make sure that business thrives and continues to thrive.
What are some of the things, Dwight, that you all do? Because I think, you know, a lot of people think distributor, well, they basically go out and sell what they're selling, liquor to mm-hmm. the on-premise and off-premise businesses. But what are some of the other things that you guys actually do? I think you were just getting there, but different parts of the program and how you do different things besides just sell.
It's promoting the brands, but and you know, with the festivals, as Stan was saying, any festivals, any trade show, it's our opportunity to get new brands and innovation in front of customers. And when I say customers, restaurateurs, mm-hmm. but also the general public as well.
Right. Gotcha. So
as far as this show goes, Stan, you guys do this around the state beyond New Orleans, correct?
No, we do this show once a year here.
Just here. Okay.
And we do it in New Orleans for a couple of reasons. One, this is an affordable time of the year to be in New Orleans. The, right. The weather's not necessarily perfect, but we think it's home, so it works out pretty good. And number two, it's a good downtime for our members because it's a little slower in the restaurant industry and hotel industry for them to come by and take a look at what we're doing and to visit with folks. You know, we have a great partnership with Republic and many of the other wholesalers and distributors because we work in the same space. They may be at the wholesale side. We may be helping the retail. We may be helping with regulatory issues. We may be helping with legislative issues because it is an important part of this. And to Dwight's point, you know, we had some folks here for a meeting not long ago, and they said that they would come back to the hotel at last call. And I said, last call is midnight on Mardi Gras night, and it lasts for an hour. The bars don't close. And they were like, well, yeah, right, funny, ha, ha, ha. Well, we saw them at 7:30 the next morning. They said, the last band started at 6. I said, well, good. And he says, and then they handed us a drink to go. He said, I found heaven.
That's a great place, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a great, absolutely. You know, you always get excited when you hear some bands playing it. They say 2, and then they go AM, and you go, oh, okay, I'm not going. Dwight, let me ask you this question. What do we see kind of trend-wise going on in Louisiana as far as different spirits, different alcoholic drinks? What's ticking up for you guys?
Well, one of the things we've had in the last 10 years, we've had an increase in native distilleries.
Yes.
You know, not just the native wineries that have existed for a while, but there's been several new distilleries popping up around the state. Some of them are quite impressive.
Yeah.
You know, whether you're talking Bayou Rum over in Lacassine that, you know, started out 3.5-4 years ago and has recently been purchased by Stoli International, and now it's in 33 countries. To, you know, there's several new vodkas being made with Louisiana rice, Louisiana sugarcane. So it's exciting. I think it's a trend that's national, but Louisiana's getting their fair share now.
Absolutely. And a lot of breweries also. We've had, I think, 35 breweries or so in Southeast Louisiana.
No doubt about
like that.
It, yes.
Yeah, yeah, the craft beer area is an area that has expanded pretty dramatically in very short order. And, you know, again, you have to fit within the regulatory regime as it exists today, but also that has to adapt some to be able to continue to have people that want to innovate and make these investments. And we see the same thing on the distilled spirit side and obviously the native wineries. This is a tough place to grow grapes consistently,
yeah.
But people have figured out a way to do some of these things. And again, the people here in Louisiana, they're always proud of their products. And, you know, that's part of that cultural attachment to this. You're seeing, you know, from a brand standpoint, you're going to see Dixie Beer announce what they're doing with their new brewery on the 7th of August. These are just positive things that we're seeing because it means that people are spending dollars in Louisiana. They're making this investment here. They're hiring people. They're building the tax base.
Mm-hmm.
And they're investing in real estate and really hard assets that are somewhat immovable. So it's nice to see the success story like Bayou Rum and see what happened to them. And we've got a very broad portfolio of businesses now across the state, and I know their business is so much different with the number of products in your line of business. They've probably grown 7 or 8-fold in the time you've been in that business.
Oh, no doubt about that. No doubt about it. I mean, from, you know, categories in the old days didn't happen. New categories didn't happen very often. Now, in the last 5 years, there's probably been, you know, 5 or 6 new category of spirits or wine, and it's exciting to be in. It's hard to keep up with, number one, but it's exciting. And a trade show like this is an opportunity to showcase things to that consumer.
Do you guys, when you go out and you identify, say, a potential brand, let's keep it local, so somebody in Louisiana that's doing it that way, lots of times it's a mom and pop business.
Most of the time,
yeah. How do you guys go about, aside from picking it up and putting it in the portfolio, are there other ways that you go about supporting the brand? Help them build their business acumen and that sort of thing?
Absolutely. I mean, Bayou Rum, for instance, came to us before they even built the distillery with an idea and a concept and asked for input on us. And we were involved in giving them suggestions on what it should taste like, what taste profile we thought it would sell. And, you know, they took some of that advice and their own creativity and came up with a winning combination. But look, we've made a commitment, Republic National made a commitment a long time ago to support, without any argument, a local winery or local distillery. They need an advocate on the wholesale side to talk about the Louisiana products. Mm-hmm. And we're in multiple states, but here in Louisiana, we will always side with them and take their brands.
Great. Let's do this, you guys. Can we take a quick break here? And then you guys stick around for another 5 minutes or so? Does that work for you? All right, friends. Hey, we're chatting with Stan Harris and Dwight Prudham from Republic, and Stan is from the Louisiana Restaurant Association. We're going to take a little break here on the show, on the radio portion. These guys are going to stick around for another shot with NOLA Drinks. We're going to chat for a few more minutes, so hey, come on back.
With the bucket in my hand, I'm just looking for a woman that ain't got no man. My bucket's got a hole in it. Yeah, my bucket's got a hole in it. My bucket's got a hole in it. I can't find no beer.
Down on the farm, down yonder, where I was born.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here at WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening in to the NOLA Drink Show today. I appreciate it. As you know, we are here at the Louisiana Restaurant Association Expo taking place at the Montreal Convention Center. Yep, that's where we are. And I'm pleased to be joined by my next two guests, Mary Beth Ferris, who is with Tabasco. Welcome to the show, Mary Beth.
Thank you very much. Proud to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. And Wendy Warren, who is the Vice President of Communications for the LRA. Thanks for joining us,
yeah,
Wendy.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Brian.
Thanks for hosting and setting all this up. It's great.
Yeah.
You having a good time?
I'm having a great time. This is our Super Bowl every year.
You know, I was just going to ask you that question, Wendy. So is this like one of those things where there's this sense, you've moved into a sense of relief at this point, and then tomorrow
not yet. Tuesday, that happens on Monday.
Okay, right. I always liken some of these things as sort of like a Mardi Gras, for example. You go, I love Mardi Gras. It's great. Glad it's over.
Yeah.
I can wait a year.
Yeah.
So what we got going on here, I think it's a really interesting. We were having some really fun conversation before we went on the air. Mary Beth, we're talking about Tabasco, which is, of course, we'll call it a heritage product or a heritage brand in Louisiana. I think one of the things that's really interesting, folks around here that are listening to the show know this. We have a lot of food products, for example, that we associate on a deeper level as part of the culture, don't we?
Absolutely. So we consider ourselves as a Louisiana brand, but also a very international brand because we are manufactured right here in Louisiana on Avery Island, home of the McElhinney family and the Avery family. And the McElhinney family owns Tabasco brand pepper sauce for 150 years.
Right. So you guys, there's a responsibility, I think, in all of this, right? That you are, as an international brand, as we were discussing before, you're sort of an ambassador for the culture with the food product.
Considering that we invented the category, yes, I would say we are.
Mm-hmm. Take that responsibility seriously, don't
Absolutely.
You?
Absolutely.
Great. Well, Wendy, some interesting relationships that you guys have developed through the LRA mm-hmm. and then working. So I think this is some people might think what the LRA is or is not, but there's a lot of cultural connection and you guys partnering with brands to do some pretty interesting stuff.
Actually, we've been around for 70 years and we've had a relationship with Tabasco for that long. And as new people come on to the staff here and there and, you know, people change and relationships grow, you know, we have an opportunity to reconnect when they launch new brands, when they're celebrating their 150th anniversary. So we've done some fun things with them this year and in the past. And we look forward to having a lot more fun with them in the future.
Yeah, I think let's talk about this since they're sitting in front of us. We have these really cute little mini bottles of Tabasco that we got going on here. And, you know, I just figured, hey, this is a sample thing. There's a, like anything in Louisiana, I guess, in New Orleans, there's a story. So let's talk about that. Why don't you start, Mary Beth?
So I'm going to let Wendy share with you her feelings about that mini bottle after she experienced our 150th kickoff of the Tabasco Burlesque Opera in January. She was there as a guest, and I think she walked away with a great feel, warm and fuzzy, bigger and better than she had before she knew what she was walking into.
So in January, we had a kickoff party for the year-long celebration of Tabasco's 150th. And it was at Tableau. There was a party, and then there was the opera at La Petite Theater. And I really wasn't sure what to expect. I had read up about it, but when...
Because we are talking about Tabasco and an opera, right? Just
right.
So we're clear.
A burlesque opera.
But for those
straight.
Of you who That's may not know what burlesque in 1894 meant comedy, so it doesn't have the same connotation as it has today. So there were beautiful costumes. The actors were absolutely great. The songs were wonderful. It had been slightly tweaked to have some some modern comedic references. The family were, you know, all around us. So it was really, we were, you know, kind of an extended member of the family that night. So it was very special in terms of like a food memory. Like I have a lot of Tabasco food memories, but this one really, like, it's on up there at the top.
It tied it all in a different way.
And then we helped them with, let me not go too far afield before we finish this mini bottle story.
Yeah, let's talk about how the opera came to be, because we don't want to skip that part. It's interesting.
Yeah.
So because people are still going, a burlesque opera about Tabasco. Let's connect those dots a little bit.
Go ahead, Wendy.
Okay, so in 1894, when they introduced this opera, the McElhenney family said, yes, you can use Tabasco, but you must sample the product as folks are leaving. So that's how the mini became the mini. They gave it to everyone who came to the burlesque opera in 1894.
It was a departing gift.
Yeah, it's great.
And that's how the little bottle came to be. And then now those little bottles are in the MREs all over the world with soldiers. And that's how they brought flavor to their food. 150 years later, we're still manufacturing Tabasco brand pepper sauce from a 1/8 ounce bottle to 55-gallon drums.
Right.
Yeah.
Tankers. We sell in tankers as well.
That's amazing.
That is amazing. I was telling you, Mary Beth, we went and did the tour there a few months back, and the new self-guided tour that you all do there. And it's a really interesting thing. And you talked about something I thought was, you know, inventing the category of hot sauce. Can you tell us a little bit about that? I mean, how did that... why did it come to be?
So, you know, I mean, we were... From 1868, I mean, there was not other hot sauce. You get to flavor your food. And Mr. McElhenney, I mean, we're sixth-generation family now. So Mr. Tony Simmons is our CEO, and Harold Osborne is our executive vice president. And they're family. They're McElhenneys. This family begins to rise through the ranks, and we have just a handful of family members in our business every day.
Now, Mary Beth, was this something, though, for example, that the McElhenneys were, you know, making this because people were making their own homespun version to flavor up food, and then there was the click of, oh, this is something that actually I think people need a product.
So Mr. McElhenney had some peppers, and he moved to his family's plantation on Avery Island, his wife-to-be, and developed his hot sauce, and then sent it to select recipients, and it just took off. Now, the story, much more in detail than simply that, but basically, his personal preference for food and his love for hot sauce had him.
There you go.
And there you go.
Somebody came across a great idea.
Mm-hmm. And somebody came across a great idea. Mm-hmm. And if he knew today what his hot sauce, his pepper sauce, because we're a pepper sauce. His pepper sauce, where it would be today, he would be quite proud.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah. Probably couldn't even imagine where it was going to go, right?
We're in 185-plus countries, 22 different languages and dialects.
Great. Wendy, do me a favor, before we're going to take a break here in a couple minutes. What does it mean for you and for the LRA to work with a brand like Tabasco? I know we kind of touched on that, but...
Our association is built on relationships. If you think of any of the chefs, past or present, or any of the ones coming up the ranks, 9 times out of 10, they're a member of the LRA. The Brennan family is a good a supporter of ours. Leah Chase, Frank Brightson, you name them. Those are those relationships that have been established over a number of years, and that's what Tabasco is for us. Tabasco is one of those, you know, I can call Mary Beth and tell her I want to put Tabasco in this. I want to promote it with this different event. And she never says, well, what about, you know, she just says, okay, tell me how many you need, tell me when you want it, blah, blah, blah. And I have it on my desk. And it's like, it's a reliable relationship that is built on something that when I carry my, you know, Tabasco Yeti cup, people stop and go, where'd you get that? And I said, well, I kind of have a relationship
with
them.
Yeah, I want one of those.
Well, do you have anything coming up that I might be able to plug it into?
And because we're a family-owned business, this McElhenney family, they love their pepper sauce, and we love them, and they love their employees. We're all extended family to them, so it's easy to share when the family that owns the brand shares.
There you go.
Right.
Great. Well, let's do this. We're going to take a break. Tell people we got about 20 seconds left. Where can people find the website for Tabasco if they want to learn more?
Tabasco.com.
Tabasco.com. Pretty easy. And go out to Avery Island and visit because it's a cool tour and a good restaurant.
So
amazing.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Awesome. And Wendy, we talked about LRA.org, right?
Yes,
so
LRA.org.
There we go. Well, thanks so much for being here and taking
Thank
some time
you.
Out. I really appreciate
Absolutely.
It. All right, everybody, bouncing back to the studio really quick. Thanks for listening in today. Hope you enjoyed it. Yeah, if you're listening on the radio, be sure to get the podcast. We're going to bounce on the podcast, if that's what you're listening to another Shot with Nola Drinks. We're going to continue our conversation with Stan Harris and Dwight Prudham of the LRA. And then also we're going to bounce back to the Montenegro and Aperitivo guys. So if you're listening on the radio, hey, we're going to sign it off right now. Remember, be kind to one another. Use your turn signal. And until then, cheers, y'all. Everybody, hey, thanks for sticking around for another Shot with Nola Drinks. Brian Diaz here with you. Hope you enjoyed those first two chats. What we're going to do here on another shot is we're going to jump right back in with our LRA conversation. We're going to go back to chatting with Stan Harris, the president of the LRA, Louisiana Restaurant Association, of course, and Dwight Prudham of Republic National Distribution Company, RNDC, when we chat a little bit more about the business and a few other things. And then from there, we'll take a quick little break. I'll come back in, and we're going to go back to Sylvain during our Tales of the Cocktail coverage, where we're going to chat with Sal, Rudy, and Gabrielle and talk a little bit about low ABV cocktails and some stuff like that. Then I'll be back with my parting shot, where we're going to continue talking about low ABV cocktails. Here we go. All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for sticking around for another Shot with Nola Drinks. Brian Diaz here with you. We are chatting with Stan Harris, who is the president and CEO of the Louisiana Restaurant Association, and Dwight Prudham, who is the branch manager with Republic National Distribution Company. Distributing Company. I knew it was, the Republic.
Thank you.
We're going to go.
Have another sip.
I said that already.
Have another sip.
I need another
you'll
sip,
be
right?
Good.
I got to kind of smooth this out a little bit here, guys.
Mellow is what we say.
Yeah,
mellow.
And I work in this business, and RNDC just rolls right off the tongue, and I try and throw everything in there. But you guys, we were just talking about something during the break here that I think was really interesting about the importance of the industry. And Stan, you were saying something about a lot of people ask you about the big guys that are your members, and we're talking about the little guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Probably 80-85% of LRA members are businesses that have under 25 employees. But it's typically a family business. It might be a husband and wife. She might be the chef. He might be the operator. We have couples that do it. They don't have to marry to do it, for sure. We have every shape and form of business around this. But what's similar to in most of the cases is they have put everything they have up in this business, and it's completely illiquid. They cannot move it to another corner if it doesn't work. They don't have the resources to do it.
Yep.
So the passion that they show for it is really important, and that's why we have so many members in Louisiana that choose to be part of the LRA. A great association might have 15-20% of the market. We've got over 50% of those people
wow.
in our
okay.
association. So mm-hmm. we must be doing something that they value, and if we're not, we want to hear from them.
Well, and you guys, tell me what you think about this, because I think we're getting there. These people invest a lot of money in their businesses. It's their lifelong pursuit, Stan, as you said. I think also what makes Louisiana interesting and somewhat unique is when people think about the service industry in particular, that is seen by and large as it's a true profession. It's mm-hmm. a craft, it's a trade. And a lot of places people say, for example, a bartender or a server or a line cook, that's a transient job. Whereas here, like we're talking about, people have been bartenders for 25 years.
There's no question about it. I mean, profession is the perfect word.
Yes.
And again, the alcohol business mirrors that. I mean, we're a very liberal state as far as the ability to get an alcohol permit and serve alcohol compared to other states. The state of Louisiana is a little over 4 million people, and we have over 8,000 licensees in the state. And most of those, probably close to the same percentage, are the very, very small mom-and-pop operations, whether it's a corner convenience store that's selling, you know, some packaged liquor or wine and boudin or cracklings, or if it's a small bar. And those members are important, and I think one of the things I think the Restaurant Association has done is always represented those people very well.
It's an important thing, right?
Yeah, we tell members when they're considering joining, become a member, what keeps you awake at night? You know, you can't follow all the federal regulations and state regulations that could impact your business, and a lot of them are aha moments for people, because we don't do it to say that you're doing something wrong. We want to help you learn how to do it right and be compliant. We've gone through a long phase talking about sexual harassment and discrimination and things of that sort, especially in this Me Too world that we're living in today. Mm-hmm. And what we've been doing is trying to educate our industry about this for the last 4 or 5, 6 years, and talking to them about how to be a compliant employer, or what I like to call an enlightened employer.
There you go.
About how to do things the right way, because everyone's fighting for the same pool of talent. And people mm-hmm. really have lots of choices today. And if they're not getting it at brand A, they're going to go to brand B.
Right.
And that puts brand A at a distinct disadvantage. So these enlightened people that do these extra things and look at creating a workplace where people enjoy coming to work, those are the people that are going to prosper. And I say something, too. People tell me they want to open a restaurant. I always ask them, you're ready to get in the restaurant business. Because right. opening a restaurant is a dream. Getting into the restaurant business can sometimes be a nightmare.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, Stan, and this is something we actually talk about on the show quite a bit. I think we saw, and I'd like to hear you speak to this if you don't mind, a trend in the post-Katrina world of, hey, if you build it, they will come. Somebody who was a sous chef out of Chicago, I got a great idea. I cook well. I'm going to go open up a restaurant in New Orleans because it's sort of a fantasy land and it works. We've seen so many people come in with 3 months or 6 months of capital. It's not how you run a business, right? In any business, including a restaurant.
No, the access to capital for our industry is very limited until you become very successful and don't need that access to capital. So being able to have working capital is a challenge. And finding that working capital, first you start with personal savings. You go to friends and family. You might find an angel investor, or your landlord might invest with you because they have an empty building. There are lots of different models in this. But the thing that I get the most enjoyment out of really is helping educate someone and understand how to run a business profitably. I spent 28 years in the restaurant business. My partner and I were the largest franchisee of Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. We operated in multiple states. We had 3 other restaurants in Baton Rouge. We had almost 3,000 people that worked for us. We built a $100 million business. I know how to do this, but it's very hard for people to understand sometimes that there are certain steps that you have to do. You cannot take those shortcuts. They don't take it in their food. They shouldn't take it when they run their business and how they deal with the people that work for them.
That's a great point, Stan. That's a great point. I think we have a lot of people come in eyes wide open, a little bit naive sometimes, and don't get that there's a whole business side to this that goes on.
I explained to a restaurateur not long ago that was struggling with their profitability. And I said, you love wine? Absolutely. I said, you're drinking an $80 or $90 bottle of wine at cost every time you have a meal. And you can't do that because you're losing a $180 sale.
Right.
And that's so right. While you may like that, it'd be better for you to pay for it out of your pocket than to run it through your cost structure, because you're still going to owe the tax on it. And the other challenge with that is they look at it and go, yeah, but I really like that. Well, I understand that. And when you become really profitable and really successful, go ahead and treat yourself to that. But you can't do it every day. You'll drink yourself out of business.
Right. That's a great point. Well, and Dwight, being that you come from that business, we know in a restaurant, for the most part, your primary cost center probably is going to be alcohol, right, as far as where your profitability is.
Absolutely.
And so when you guys go in and you deal with somebody small, how do you help them with that, or how do you address
basically,
that with them?
Basically the same way. I mean, you know, there's mathematical equations and just educating them on really cost versus, you know, the sale and what it means to them. And look, one of the things, I've been involved with the Restaurant Association for over 20 years, and I was very lucky that my predecessor got me started and defined why it was important to me to be involved in this in the early, in the late 90s. One of the things that I questioned early on was why should somebody be a member of the Restaurant Association? What value does it have for them? And I got to hand it to Stan. You know, since he's become our leader, I don't think they ask that question anymore. I think it's, you know, the way we've streamlined things at the Restaurant Association and, you know, spent a lot of time on the advocacy part and also educating the future generations with the ProStart program. I think now that it's real easy to explain why there's a value to be a member of the association.
Absolutely. And you know what, Stan, and we'll close out with this because I think that Dwight just touched on something important. We talk about generational businesses, and that's really an important part of the industry, right? There's a character that we get in Louisiana that depends on restaurants, hospitality, not just being a one-and-done kind of situation. We are talking about family stuff. We're talking about generational stuff. We're talking about tradition. That's part of the appeal, isn't it?
We had a restaurant last year celebrate its 175th anniversary, Antoine's.
Yep.
We have Arno's that are celebrating its 100th anniversary this year.
Yep.
That doesn't happen in other parts of the country.
Exactly.
So we're very, very blessed to have those types of operations here. But at the same time, a 5-year milestone is great. A 10-year mm-hmm. milestone is great. A 20-year milestone. And that's why we're doing this Restaurant Legends program where we recognize people who have worked in the same place for 20 years. We want to show that the industry does care about the people that work there, and they're the backbone of that business. You ask anyone who works a shift, anyone who manages, anyone who owns it, you can't do it without the people. So it's something that we're committed to continue to try to help our folks get better.
That's great. Stan, do me a favor. Tell people where they can find more about the LRA online.
Easiest place to find it is lra.org, lra.org.
Excellent. What about you, Dwight? Where can people find out more about Republic if they're interested?
RNDC.com.
RNDC.com.
Not, that, we have a,
you wanted to keep that domain name short, right?
We have a complete website, and if anybody's interested in, you know, having a future in this industry, just go to our careers tab, and any opportunity that's out there is listed on that.
Excellent.
And from us, LouisianaHospitalityJobs.com.
Okay, great. Awesome. Gentlemen, thank you very much for taking some time. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Friends, we're going to take a little break here on Another Shot with Noel Drinks. Come on back. All right, everybody. Hey, we're going to go right back in, as I said, to our conversation. We're going to get back over there to Sylvain during our Tales of the Cocktail coverage and chat with Salvatore Tafuri, Rudy Carraro, and Gabrielle Manfredi of Montenegro Amaro and Aperitivo Select. We're going to talk a little bit about low ABV cocktails, and I'll be right back with my parting shot. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Another Shot with Noel Drinks. Thanks for sticking around with us here on the podcast-only portion of the show. I appreciate it. We're chatting with Gabrielle Salvatore and Rudy, as you know, and we're talking about Aperitivo and Amaro, two very interesting and tasty categories. You may know some of these things. You may not know some of these things. But let's talk about this, Salvatore, because we wanted to mention this. Now that we're talking to a lot of our bartender friends here in the world, both products, correct, now have new bottles going on.
Correct.
Yeah.
So we have a new bottle of Amaro Montenegro. So we just released a couple of months ago in the United States, the 750. We're going to release soon the liter as well.
Okay.
It's really important to understand we didn't change the product. Since 1885, we never changed the recipe. We just changed the bottle, and we changed the bottle for a reason. I've been bartending for over 12 years, and we changed it for our community. So finally, we don't have any more the cap, so we can put a metal pour. So it's going to be much easier to pour Amaro Montenegro, and also you can fit the bottle in a speed rack. So,
which is very important.
Yes.
Right? And I think people,
you know, see,
so
like you want to see the bottle in the back bar, but you want to pour more shots, so you want to reach the bottle like much easier. You're going to have a metal pour, and then it's going to be
and fits well on the
faster.
Well.
Yes.
Right. Excellent. And did we change the bottle on the 1920 Select also, Rudy?
Yes, we did. And we did it because the previous bottle didn't really pay homage of the beautiful liquid that we have here. So the liquid has been around since the 1920s. And we decided to go back to the same style of the bottle that we used to have in the 1920s, more or less. So a very classic style of bottle. Mm-hmm. We have a liter bottle. It's the only size that's going to be available because we're confident that everybody's going to sell tons of Selk Spritz, so they need a bottle that they can use, you know, without changing every 5 seconds. The bottle itself also recalls the Murano glass factories, okay? Because we have a liter insert on the neck of the bottle. It's like to pay homage of the Murano artists.
Okay.
The glass blower, basically. since, you know, firstly, Select was distilled in the Murano Island.
Okay, interesting.
By the Pila Distilleries, and then, you know, it's been bought by Amaro Montenegro. And I think this bottle, we help everybody to understand that, as Salvatore was saying before, we've been on the market for a very long time. The only thing, we just need to get known a little bit better. And I think once you try the Venetian Spritz or selecting any of the drinks, you can really understand the value of the product.
Absolutely. Great. Gabriel, what do you think in regards to... Well, let's do this. Let's move to this question because we have a few minutes left here. I think we see a pattern or a trend towards lower ABV drinks to a degree. And also, I think what you were talking about, Salvatore, with shots... We know it's very common to do shots with your guests while you're working, which can be very difficult if it's tequila all the time, right?
It is.
Yes, it can be hard on you. And so with Amaro and having these things, are you starting to see that more? Are you doing that more in your establishment?
That's what we try to promote. We try to avoid shots. And then, as I said before, we really focus on low-alcohol cocktail in order to let the guest enjoy more the liquid inside itself. Because if you think when you mix Amaro Montenegro only, let's say only with tonic water or soda, it's going to help to the guest to understand much more the product and enjoy
have a longer
the
time,
product
right.
itself. Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
And I think that...
And then don't forget, maybe you can have two or three rather
right.
than one.
Right. And you don't have to hurry. This is what we're talking about. It connects more closely with the culture in Italy, and I think we see that. It connects closely with the culture here in New Orleans as well. We like to have lunch for 4 hours.
Yeah. I mean, some people missing the three martini rules, and we understand that. Mm-hmm. But imagine, like, if you have three martinis compared to three spritz, you know, like, you can enjoy your dinner after. You can have, like, you can taste all the flavor of the food. So that is, like, really important for us to compare the food with the cocktails as well.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Well, y'all, do me a favor before we go here on the show. Tell people, where can we find Aperitivo Select and Amaro Montenegro online?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have two different websites. For Aperitivo Select is selectaperitivo.com, and for Amaro Montenegro is amaromontenegro.com.
Great, excellent. And Oriole, where do we find website, Facebook?
It's mainly on Facebook and Instagram.
Okay, our
website is oriole.com.
excellent.
So easy.
Great.
Yes,
gentlemen, thank you very much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you,
Brian.
So much.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
We'll see you again soon.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's go for an aperitif.
Yeah, let's do that. Here we go. We'll do that. Now we're going to get into that the mezcal variation I want to taste. So friends, are going to take a little break here on another shot. Come on back. All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for listening into the show today. As always, really appreciate it. We were jam-packed this week, as you know, with lots of interviews. Wanted to make sure that we covered the Louisiana Restaurant Association Expo as it just occurred, and then continuing to run some of our great stuff that we took care of and recorded during Tales of the Cocktail. Got a little bit more of that to go. Probably see some of that next week as well. Still working on that a bit. But yeah, here's our parting shot. Friends, want to talk a little bit about sort of the theme, if you will, through part of the show about lower ABV cocktails. And I think it's an interesting thing. I think it's an interesting trend, and I think it's a good thing. And we sort of touched on this in the interview with Sal, Rudy, and Gabrielle. You know, you kind of picture that stereotypical outdoor Italian cafe where the old guys are sitting around all day drinking aperitivo spritzes, for example. I think it paints a nice picture, doesn't it? And, you know, there's an idea there behind that we'll get into because, hey, you're sitting there all day drinking, right? And this is a good way to do it. But, you know, one of the things that I think is also interesting about it is that these days, especially with the numerous products that we find on the market, all these new liqueurs, all these new spirits that are out there, some other things, you know, the world of cocktails and craft cocktails is bigger than ever. And when we start talking about lower ABV stuff, again, there's so many flavor choices out there and product choices out there. It's a huge palette from which to work. Now, certainly one of the things that you can do is you can make lower ABV versions of certain classics. Okay, so people take that base spirit that's higher in proof, of course, and substitute, say, something like an Amaro in for it or something along those lines. And there's a lot of variations out there. Now, sometimes I think with those drinks, you know, you're really creating something new there. And sometimes if you strip away that base spirit with many drinks in particular, it just doesn't work, or it's just something entirely different. different and you have to take it differently and don't expect it to be a sort of a, you know, light sugar kind of thing, consideration, if you will. It just doesn't happen. But there's a lot of classic stuff out there too. We know the Americano, which is a very old 19th century cocktail, probably from the 1860s in Italy. It was originally called the Milano Torino, but that is basically an aperitivo. Campari, it was the original one in this place. And then it also used Punta Mess vermouth and soda water, club soda. Yeah, there you go. And that's a drink that's been around forever. It's a progenitor to the Negroni, most likely. Spritzes have been around for a long time. So there's a lot of long existing lower ABV cocktails that are already out there. Now, other ways that you can go with this, of course, that there's beer cocktails, wine cocktails, sherry cocktails, vermouth cocktails. When you're using those spirits or those liquors as the base, that's, you're talking about lower ABV by definition, right? But then we have all these other things out there like beer and sailors. And I mean, the list is just too long to mention. Fortified wines, for example, like vermouth, that are out there that really do a good job. And again, one of the things that I think is really neat when you start talking about those different ingredients is that you have this broad spectrum of flavors that you can play with. So we're not so much dependent on that base spirit to be the thing that drives the ship. Actually, lots of times things can get more of an equal footing. Now, let's be clear. No rules here are hard and fast. We know that there are certain cocktails that combine that are all just liquor, right? Of course, and there are one or two or three things are actually pulling the weight equally. Don't get me wrong. But a lot of them, hey, it's one base spirit with a couple modifiers in it is really what we're talking about here, right? And I think when we talk about lower ABV cocktails, what opens up so many possibilities is that you can mix four or five things in there and have them bring something to the table equally or nearly equally. It's a broad palette. It's giving bartenders and a home enthusiasts a lot to play with, I think. So it's a really cool, big opening world out there for lower ABV cocktails in a way that you can explore based on a flavor profile perspective, which I think is really fascinating and really fun. Now, of course, what we're also talking about here, the benefits of lower ABV cocktails, a term that people are using these days, is called sessionability, meaning I can sit there and have a longer session, if you will, because I'm drinking lower ABV cocktails. So, hey, if I'm going out all day or I'm going to be sitting outside, I'm going to a tailgate party, a festival, you know, floating down the river in a tube, whatever we're talking about, this is the way to go. You're going to be in the sun. You're not getting quite that same level of heightened diuretic effect from higher proof alcohol. So there's that sessionability part about it. I think it's great. It also plays into some things when we talk about work-life balance for our friends in the hospitality industry, bartenders and such, that if they are in a situation where they drink on the job or are able to drink on the job, want to drink on the job, lower ABV cocktails might be a great way to go instead of drinking high proof spirits. One of the things that I think you see manifest, and we've talked about this from a different angle on the show before, is doing lower ABV shots. Okay, we all think it's fun, or many of us anyway, I know I do, think it's fun when we go to one of our favorite bars and the bartender buys us a shot and the bartenders and, you know, the guests there that are in the group, we do a shot together. And there's a symbolic ceremonial component to this that I think is great, but an option for the bartenders or even an option for us because of sessionability, there you go, are lower ABV shots. It's very common these days to see people pour you a shot of Amaro, for example, since we've been talking about that on the show, or a shot of vermouth. So really not a whole lot of alcohol going on in it, some real nice flavor. It's the ceremonial component of doing a shot with your friends and with those that are hosting you that I think is really neat, and it provides that that opportunity as well. So what we're really saying here, friends, is that it allows you a long evening out without getting totally hammered. There's our parting shots, friends, for you. Well, I hope you tune in next week, and we'll have a good show for you as soon as we figure out what it is. Here's to you.